In association with For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site, this is For Whom the Podcast Tolls. And now, Daniel Black and Ethan Lee.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to another episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls here on June 14th, 2016. This is the official podcast of For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site. I'm Daniel Black, writer for For Whom the Cowbell Tolls, and not joining me is manager Ethan Lee. And in fact, no one is joining me today. It's just going to be me hanging out here, which is sort of fitting for the show's topic today, most disappointing topic. The Mississippi State Bulldogs swept in the Starkville Super Regional by the Arizona Wildcats, a loss in Game 1, 1-0, a loss in Game 2, 6-5. We'll get into that, and we've got some questions, and also sort of to add on to the more to the disappointing baseball news, Nick Mingione, Mississippi State's assistant coach and recruiting coordinator for baseball, is leaving to become the next head coach at the University of Kentucky. We'll get into that, and once again, we have some questions. But we're going to have to dive into this. It's not something that I really wanted to dive into, but we're going to have to. Mississippi State losing the Super Regional to Arizona over the weekend, completing their season. Mississippi State completing their season at 44-18-1. The regular season 21-9 SEC record. What to say about this weekend? It was... there were so many things about this weekend in which you just think, you know, what could have been. It's most depressing and most disappointing, and it's absolutely horrible to think about, you know, what could have been, what actually happened, the differences that could have happened for us, that could have led to a win in the Super Regional and 10th Omaha appearance. It's not, this was sort of, this is a weekend in which, this is not, we did not see the team that we have been used to seeing throughout the regular season this past weekend, and that's very fair to say. This seemed like a completely different team, particularly in the first game and the last, I guess, three innings of game two. I mean, the first eight innings, or really the first seven and a half innings of game two, was the team that we've been seeing all year. But that's all we saw in this past weekend. We did not see the team we've seen in the regular season, the SEC championship team, the team that beat Vanderbilt and Florida and Ole Miss and Texas, and sorry, LSU. We didn't see that, and that's ultimately what cost us. Game one, and by the time I'm done actually recapping the games, we'll get into some things that people have said, you know, sort of message board warriors and Facebook commenters and commenters on the From the Cowboy Tolls website have said that, and just angry people on Twitter, pretty much. I'll get into all that because some of the things they've said is just absolutely ridiculous. But game one, Arizona wins it in 1-0. It was one of the most boring games I've ever. I mean, it was obviously somewhat exciting knowing that it was a close game throughout the entire ball game. But it was most boring. The only, really, to tell you the truth, the only exciting thing that happened during this entire game was the power outage. Well, but we were able to pitch. We pitched absolutely beautifully. And we made the comment that, you know, this team can win in any situation, that this is a complete team. And the complete opposite occurred. It was one of the better pitching performances of the season. Dakota Hudson, the first round pick, and we're also going to discuss the MLB draft, 11 Bulldogs drafted, and who I think will be coming back, and questions asked about the outlook for next season, so I'll discuss sort of maybe a possible starting lineup and whatnot when we get into the questions. But Dakota Hudson, the first round pick, 34th overall to the St. Louis Cardinals, a most undeserving loss. Pitches absolutely fantastically, and this was something that happened not only to Dakota Hudson, but to Austin Sexton. That you see here, Dakota Hudson gave up 7 hits and 6 and a third, and you may think, ew, 7 hits, you know, they probably scored maybe 3 or 4 runs. No, they only scored 1 run. He struck out 6. In addition to that, it was, you know, Arizona in game 1 was able to get guys on base, but they really weren't, but they weren't able to put a lot of many runs across, and they were able to put that 1 run across, and I'm sure everyone could bet their life, or maybe not their life savings, but a good chunk of money before the weekend, thinking that if you were to go up to someone and say, hey, Arizona's only going to score 1 run in the game in game 1, I'm sure a lot of people will be putting up some sums of money that we would win that by maybe at least 3 or 4 runs. Once again, at least 3 or 4 runs. But yeah, a great performance by Dakota Hudson, and an even better performance by Daniel Brown, who was drafted in the 8th round. I don't remember where. But he pitched one of the better performances of his season. 2 2/3, giving up no hits, no runs, striking out 3. A fantastic outing for Daniel Brown. But it was even better on the side of Bobby Dalbec, who I'm sure is one of the most hated men in the city of Starkville, or in any city in which a Mississippi State lives. Bobby Dalbec, the third baseman, who pitched 8 2/3, gave up 5 hits, no runs, and struck out 9 pitchers. This game, I mean, once again, we pitched beautifully, a great pitching day, and this was a team that we've pretty much settled on saying, you know, this is a hitting team, this is our identity. At the beginning of the season, we really didn't have an identity, but as the season went on, we've sort of established ourselves as a very good hitting team, and that's sort of where our strength was. And one of the biggest strengths of this ball club throughout the season is that we were able to hit, and it was something that was the complete opposite of 2014 and 2015. We were able to hit with 2 outs. With 2 outs, with a couple men on, I'd say 70% of the time we'd be able to score at least 1 run in that inning where we had a man coming up to the plate with 2 outs and men on base. And the complete opposite happened. See, after it started out in the first inning, 2 runners left on base. I'll go ahead and say this, that when Arizona obviously was the away team in the first game, and when they hit that open, they didn't open the game, they didn't score a run in the first inning, but when they gave up that, but when they hit that double to lead off the game, you had to have sort of just had a bit of a creeping of worry in your mind, thinking, oh God, you know, they gave up a double on Dakota Hudson's 5th pitch, the first man on. But we get 2 men on and strand them. We had men on, I guess, 1st and 2nd with 2 outs. 1st and 2nd with 1 out, with 2 of our best hitters coming up, Gavin Collins and Jacob Robson, and they both fly out. You know, that wasn't good. Going down to the 3rd inning, we have men on 2nd and 3rd with Jacob Robson coming up, and he grounds out. And I will say this, that Jacob Robson, that was pretty close, that one play. He certainly hustled to beat out that throw, but he was out. At least what I saw, he was out. So that's 2 innings in which we had men on with 2 outs. The next inning, the 4th... I hate talking about this so much. We had men on 2nd and 3rd once again with Jake Mangum coming into the play. When you're thinking, with 2 outs, with men on 2nd and 3rd, you have to think that's money in the bank. Jake Mangum, the best hitter on the team, at least the most consistent hitter on the team throughout the entire season, that's money. We're going to get at least 2 runs. We're going to get at least a run, probably 2 out of this. And he strikes out. You know, at this point, you're thinking, what is going on? That's 3 innings. And we move down to the 9th inning, down 1-0. Brent Rooker strikes out. Reed Humphrey strikes out. Then Ryan Gridley and John Holland are starting to get a rally going. So men on 1st and 2nd, Jake Mangum coming up again, and he strikes out on three pitches. Jake Mangum's performance this weekend is sort of the perfect imagery. It is sort of the perfect image, the poster child for Mississippi State's entire performance. You know, Jake Mangum is the hot hitter, probably the most popular guy in Starkville that is currently a student-athlete at Mississippi State University, because you can make the argument for Dak Prescott, but he's no longer a student-athlete at Mississippi State University. So Jake Mangum's probably the biggest guy. You know, he's sort of the big man on campus, although let's just say, face it, Jake Mangum's not that big of a guy, at least from what I could tell. You know, I'm the 6'1", 135 guy speaking. You know, skinny guys, you know. I can relate. But anyways, Jake Mangum's the face on campus. He is the man. Going in, you know, Mississippi State, one of the top three teams in the SEC, SEC champions, arguably the best team in the SEC. Sixth national seed coming in, sweeps through the regional. Aaron Fitt has us as one of his four national championship contenders. You know, we're sort of one of the big faces in the NCAA tournament coming into the Super Regional. And you compare both Jake Mangum and Mississippi State's performances. Jake Mangum goes 0-for-4 in game one. You see that strikeout in the fourth inning. Strikes out on three pitches. Those three pitches, the first one, a ball in the dirt, he swings at it. The second one, a ball high and away, he swings at it. The third one, a ball in the dirt, he swings at it. This is something that Jake Mangum has struggled with. I mean, not even struggled with. This is something he's done throughout the entire season. He swings at pretty much every single pitch he faces. And I think opponents got... Yeah, I think these opponents caught on to that. And they're starting to swing, they're starting to throw these errant pitches at him, balls in the dirt, balls high and away, hoping he chases at them, and he did. Once again, he swung at two balls in the dirt and a ball high and away that was not even close to him in that fourth inning. And then the ninth inning, I personally think he may have been scared to swing. He watched two pitches on those first two strikes. He watched them go by. They were strikes right down the pipe. Fastballs right up the middle. And he watched them go by. And that third pitch, he swung at a ball that wasn't close to him. I don't know if that was just a freshman mistake. And I hope it was. Because I don't want this moving on to the next season. And going into next season. And also 2018. Because, you know, Jake Mangum's sort of going to be the face of the program starting next year. If you think about it, knowing that we're losing a Dakota Hudson and an Austin Sexton. Once again, I'll get into that more. But Jake Mangum's sort of going to be the face of the team next year. And I really hope that this doesn't bring down his momentum and his confidence. But Jake Mangum's performance in Game 1 was very perfect, the imagery for Mississippi State. In game one. A 1-0 loss. And at that point, I'm sure a lot of confidence was lost in this baseball team. At least on my part, because, you know, I'm pessimist Daniel. It was an awful hitting day, a great pitching day, and we could only hope for the best for Saturday. And then game two happened. A 6-5 loss in 11 innings, and during that game too, those first seven and a half innings were absolutely beautiful. You know, a 5-1 lead entering the eighth inning. A 5-1 lead going to the bottom half of the eighth inning, a 4-1 lead going into the eighth inning. Things were looking nice and beautiful. We actually hit the ball pretty well in that game. We didn't hit the ball as well as we had throughout the entire season. You know, we totaled 7 hits, but we were able to score 5 runs off of them. But I remember it was unsure whether Nathan Bannister, the Arizona's ace, would pitch or not. And when he got the call to be on the bump for that game, you know, I'm sure some state guys were sort of worried. Knowing that was Arizona's ace, Nathan Bannister, got drafted in the MLB to the pros in the MLB draft, and we were able to hit off of him pretty well. He gave up four runs, in a walk in 6 innings, And this was a game that was dominated by pitching. It was similar to game one. It was dominated by pitching. We see Austin Sexton throw five and a third innings. Once again, I mentioned this when talking about Dakota Hudson's performance. It's similar. Those two performances were very similar. They both gave up seven hits, but they only gave up one run. And Sexton struck out six. I believe Hudson struck out six as well. So pretty much the exact same performance from both Austin Sexton and Dakota Hudson. Ryan Rigby comes in, and his first inning was just fine. And then... I hate talking about this so much. We see Ryan Rigby falter. That sort of spiraled into Daniel Brown faltering. That sort of spiraled in, for the most part, Reed Humphreys struggling. And then even Blake Smith struggled. That's Ryan Rigby, Daniel Brown, and Blake Smith, and you can make the argument for Reed Humphreys, have been lights out in the latter part of, or really, eliminate Humphreys from that. Rigby, Brown, and Smith have been three of our best bullpen options. After the regional, we thought the bullpen was the reason, pretty much, why we won the Starkville Regional. The bullpen was why we lost the Starkville Super Regional. It's night and day. It's absolutely incredible seeing the difference between how our bullpen performed in the Starkville Regional compared to the Super Regional. Absolutely amazing. But a 6-5 loss, Mississippi State had a 5, you all know what happened, 5-1 lead going to the 8th inning, gave up 4 runs, or 3 runs in the 8th. And we had a lead going into the 9th inning, but did you truly believe we were going to win that game when we gave up 3 in the 8th? Did you truly believe we were actually going to win that game? We were up by a run going to the 9th inning, and I stopped watching it. We were leading, and I stopped... It's just one of those things where you're sort of like, this is a very Mississippi State-esque thing, you know? Yeah. But I'm not going to talk about this game at length. You know, we hit the ball well for the most part. Brent Rooker, an incredible day. Brent Rooker lit fire at the end of the season, hitting 4 home runs in the regional and the super regional. His third in this game too, against Arizona, his third multi-hit day, multi-home run day of the season. And, you know, we had 7 hits in that game, 3 of which came from Brent Rooker. 2 of those hits are home runs. Brent Rooker, 3 for 4, 3 RBIs. So that ultimately leads, you know, I'm done talking about the Super Regional. It sucked. I'm done recapping the games, but I'm just going to address the fans for a second here. By the way, Arizona outhit us 18-7, which I think is most absolutely astounding. I can't believe that they actually outhit us by 11 and we only lost by 1 run. It amazes me. But anyways, I'm going to talk about the fans for a second. I've never seen a fan base hate a successful coach as much as Mississippi State baseball fans hate John Cohen. They will find any way humanly possible to blame John Cohen for something. Anything. There are fans... And people who read For Whom the Cowbell Tolls know this if they read the comment section. There are fans that whenever Mississippi State succeeds, whether they go to the College World Series, win the SEC title, go to a Super Regional, they won't think of John Cohen. John Cohen isn't in their minds. They don't think, wow, what a coaching job by John Cohen. They just think the players win in spite of them. They think that John Cohen does not exist. They think he's inexistent when Mississippi State's baseball succeeds. But when Mississippi State baseball struggles, when we have the 2009s, the 2010s, the 2015s of the world, when we lose in a super regional, John Cohen is the reason why. John Cohen is the reason why we lost. John Cohen needs to be fired. John Cohen is an awful head coach. John Cohen thinks too much. He overthinks. He's horrible. But when we win, oh, the players, what a game. Brent Rooker, fantastic. Dakota Hudson, Jake Mangum did a great job. John Cohen's never mentioned when we win, but John Cohen is always mentioned when we lose. And in this game is no exception. The fans who think that Brent Rooker's being, because, I mean, obviously everyone knows, but going into that eighth inning with a 5-1 lead, there was a defensive substitution bringing in Mike Smith in for Brent Rooker in the outfield. And first of all, people who were starting to bash Cohen for bringing in Eli Marrero as DH instead of Reed Humphreys, They were resting up Reed Humphreys for a possible relief situation. I think Reed Humphreys struggled in game one, and his injury may have had something to do with that. Don't forget, Reed Humphreys got injured in that regional. And he played in game one, and he struggled. So they sat him for game two, probably due to injury reasons and the fact that he could be winded and tired, and his injury could be bothering him by the time he needs to go into a pitching situation. That's exactly what happened. He came into a situation in which he needed to pitch. But Brent Rooker was once again sat, and it ended up becoming that it ended up the case was. Then Mississippi State was tied 5-5 with a man on first, and Mike Smith came up to bat instead of Brent Rooker. And because of that, obviously, fans are blaming that as the reason why we lost. No! The only thing that I have questioned in that situation is Brent Rooker never made him. I'm going to defend the fans for one thing, and I think the fans who believe that Brent Rooker's being sat is the reason I think they're stupid. I think that opinion is absolutely dumb. It's just one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my life. But I'll defend them on this one thing. Brent Rooker never made a mistake on defense. So I don't really know exactly why he was sat in terms of the defensive justification, but still, Mike Smith is a seasoned outfielder. He's probably has more experience, probably is better defensively than Brent Rooker. And when you're up 4 runs going into the 8th inning, you're not expecting a lights-out bullpen. A bullpen that, I'm not going to call it lights-out, but a bullpen that had been lights-out in recent situations. You're not expecting them to give up 4 runs in this course of, over the course of 2 innings. You're not expecting that. When Austin, you know, people, I've seen people question Austin Sexton's being replaced. The situation Austin Sexton had when he was replaced, there was a man on first with one out with Bobby Dalbec coming up to the plate. And in that game, Bobby Dalbec, once again, the most hated man in Starkville, Mississippi, Bobby Dalbec had already hit a home run in that game off of Austin Sexton. So it made sense for Austin Sexton to be pulled and be replaced by Ryan Rigby, who had probably been the best, other than Zach Houston, probably the most consistent and best pitcher on Mississippi State's team in recent outings. It only made sense. And if you think that just because Brent Rooker was pulled, if you don't think the bullpen had anything to do with it, and you want to blame John Cohen's pulling Brent Rooker, you're really stupid. Yeah, Brent Rooker was the reason, you know, Brent Rooker's benching was the reason why we lost. Yeah, the bullpen gave up 5 runs too. They had nothing to do with it. Now, let's just say this. Once again, Mike Smith did actually go up to bat. Brent Rooker had a great game. I know that. He was 3-for-4, hit 2 home runs. But there was a man on first with 2 outs. What are the chances Brent Rooker would have driven him home? I'll just ask you that. What are the chances? Sure, he 75% of the times he was up in that game, he was able to get a base hit. But it's baseball. A player can hit a home run past the left field lounge into, you know, onto the Great Wall of China. I don't know. One at bat, and the next one he can strike out on 3 pitches. It's just the name of the game. So, yes, Brent Rooker was pulled. Sure, it was a questionable decision. But that's not the reason why we lost. And I'll go ahead and say this. John Cohen owned it. John Cohen, one of the first things he did when he entered that press room, he mentioned Mike Smith's being pulled, and he said, that was my fault, it was a mistake. So for those who think that John Cohen was ignoring that situation, he wasn't. He owned it. And for those who think that John Cohen should be fired, yeah, we should fire the SEC Coach of the Year who just led Mississippi State to their first SEC championship in a generation. Yeah, fire him. Fire the coach that was just 3 years off of a national title appearance. Yeah, fire him. I'll say this. I've said this for a very long time. I think that our fan base is incredible. In a negative fashion. Our fan base can stick together and be a family and be absolutely fantastic one time, and then turn against each other and be absolutely horrible the next. And I've seen both of those. A majority is positive. I'd say a good 80 to 85% of the fan base is very proud of this team, and that's what you should be. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be heartbroken or disappointed or sad, because that's certainly what I was. I'm still in sort of a state of depression because of this. You know, this is arguably the most talented team in the history of Mississippi State baseball. I mentioned that in a piece. I compared it to 1989 and 1985 and 2013, because 2013 is turning out to be one of the more talented teams in the history of state baseball. It's just been 3 years off of that team, and two of our key contributors are starting in the MLB, Chad Girardeau and Kendall Graveman, and Adam Frazier and Hunter Renfroe are both in AAA and getting very ever so close to starting on their rosters. Frazier for the Pittsburgh Pirates and Hunter Renfroe for the San Diego Padres. I compared this. This team had 11 draft picks, the most of any Mississippi State team ever. So obviously, you should be disappointed. But should you be thinking that John Cohen should be fired because we lost this game? Absolutely not. If you do, you're genuinely stupid, and I think you should. And personally, I think you should find another team. That's my opinion. But enough of that. Mississippi State had 11 players drafted. There were so many of them, I could probably list them off my head. So Dakota Hudson, actually no, I'm not going to be able to. I'm going to pull them up really quickly here, but Dakota Hudson drafted in the first round to the St. Louis Cardinals, 34th overall. Then Reed Humphreys and Daniel Brown were selected back-to-back in the seventh round, I believe. If my freaking internet could load. It's not letting me click on this article. Oh. So yeah, Reed Humphreys and Daniel Brown both drafted in the seventh round. Reed Humphreys drafted to the Colorado Rockies, and Daniel Brown drafted to the Milwaukee Brewers. And then after that, it was Jacob Robson drafted the Detroit Tigers, joining Brett Pirtle in 2014. He was drafted by the Tigers. And then Zach Houston also drafted to the Detroit Tigers. And then adding on to that, Nathaniel Lowe and Gavin Collins. Lowe drafted to the Tampa Rays, and Collins drafted the Cleveland Indians. And then finally, Vance Tatum, which really surprised me. But Vance Tatum, Austin Sexton, and Jack Kruger drafted Tatum to the Royals. Sexton joining Dakota Hudson to the Cardinals. Those are two good pitchers, two Bulldog pitchers, joining the St. Louis Cardinals organization. And then Jack Kruger drafted to the Los Angeles Angels. And then Brent Rooker was drafted, I believe, the 38th round. To the Minnesota Twins. So, at least nine of those guys are going to be gone. I haven't seen any indication from Jack Kruger. You know, pretty much all of the guys have posted on social media, you know, I'm a Bulldog forever, thank you for everything. So that pretty much means they're going to be gone. But Brent Rooker hasn't posted anything on social media about his season or whatnot. But Jack Kruger interests me, because Jack Kruger never posted anything about reminiscing on his days as a Mississippi State Bulldog like a lot of these other guys. He just said, thank you for a great junior season. And that sort of makes me wonder if he will be coming back to Mississippi State. I'm just going through his Twitter account. You know, obviously social media doesn't give away everything, but still it gives away a good bit, and Kruger really hasn't indicated if he's leaving or not. He said, you know, I'm proud to be a Bulldog with it, and thank you for my junior season, but that doesn't mean he's leaving or not. So Kruger is sort of up in the air. I think Brent Rooker's going to come back. I mean, for two reasons. One, Brent Rooker's only a sophomore, so he can definitely improve on his skills and be drafted higher in the next season. And also, the thing that sort of was the selling point was in that post-game press conference, Brent Rooker just cried for a good 15 minutes. And you can tell that he wants to do something more. I think that Rooker will probably come back and help his team. I think Rooker will come back. Kruger, maybe. If I would have to guess, Jack Kruger would leave. But at least 9 of those guys, the Hudson through, I guess it was Gavin Collins, or sorry, Hudson through Austin Sexton, those first 9 will definitely be leaving. And then finally, Nick Mangione left for Kentucky. Nick Mangione, the next head baseball coach for the Wildcats in Lexington, was a former Kentucky assistant under John Cohen. I'll go ahead and tell you this. One of the first things John Cohen always did when people congratulated him and talked about and asked him on the season was he mentioned Nick Mangione and how great of a recruiting job he did. And I'm sure Kentucky took note of that, all of those times that John Cohen mentioned Nick Mangione in a post-game interview. And also, people have tweeted this. I've never spoken to Nick Mangione personally, and I don't know him, so I'm not sure how good of a guy he is or what his personality is like. But a lot of the media guys on Twitter said that he has a very infectious personality. He probably killed the interview, and he's a great guy. So, you know, I guess that's a part of it as well. But Nick Mangione is a fantastic coach, served us well for 8 seasons, and I'm sure he'll do fantastically at Kentucky. So on to some questions. We only have some questions from Mr. Vanderlip, the KT Vanderlip, trademark, your large dog trademark on Twitter. So it looks like he's going to get a run. He's going to get a run for having the most questions. He's going to have a run for being the first question. So now he takes a 17-15 lead. And by the way, this graphic he made is absolutely fantastic. One of the funnier things I've seen. I don't know who it's supposed to be in the background. I guess it's just a picture of crying Jordan. I don't know if it's a photoshopped crying Jordan on someone, but it is a crying Jordan. So another run for that, 18-15. Mr. V leads, but he has 6 questions. Number one. Is it better to have supered and lost than to never have supered at all? This is interesting because a question similar to that was asked before the Arkansas series in the regular season, I pretty much answered this exact same thing, and it was foreshadowing to what was to come. I said, imagine losing a super regional in Starkville. I don't remember the exact question and who exactly asked it, but it was something along the lines of, you know, would you rather lose in a regional and win the SEC title or not win the SEC title? Would you rather lose in a super as SEC champions or go to the College World Series not as SEC champions or something like that? And I don't remember what I answered, and I think it just depends on the situation. But yeah, Well, I'd say it's better to have supered and lost, especially with this team, because if you're the SEC champions and you lose in a regional, that's worse than losing in a super regional. That is significantly worse than losing in a super regional. Had we not won the SEC, I think I'd say going to the super regional is a lot better than losing in a regional. Number two. What does the baseball team look like next year? I'm glad you asked this, because I was typing the same thing to Ethan Lee, who says hi, by the way. And I was talking about the team next year, and I sort of thought up of a possible starting lineup based solely off of guys I think will be coming back. I don't know anything about the signees. I don't know anything about the talent coming in. This is just based solely off of players that are returning. So here we go. Lineup. This doesn't have a pitching. This is nothing involving a pitching staff. Connor Pilkington, unless some signee or a bullpen guy will come up big. Connor Pilkington will probably be our ace. Will be something. Will, which is something else. But anyways, this is probably what. Just once again, based solely off of returning players, this was the lineup I created. Catcher Eli Marrero. First base, the American boy, Cole Gordon. Shortstop, Ryan Gridley. Second base, Hunter Stovall. Third base, Luke Alexander. You probably forgot about Luke Alexander, the freshman who played at the very beginning of the season. Played both second and third base, and knowing that Hunter Stovall established himself as a pretty good second baseman this past season, if Luke Alexander starts, he'll probably be at third. And the outfielders, Jake Mangum, Brent Rooker, and Cody Brown. And I have no idea who the DH would be. So just looking at this lineup, the good thing is, with the exception of Cole Gordon, all of these guys have playing experience, have very solid experience. Marrero, Stovall, Alexander, those three guys are underclassmen that have the talent and the potential, all the potential in the world to really shine, particularly Eli Marrero. John Cohen is sort of... raved about Eli Marrero, and he struggled at the plate. He was a very fine catcher. He was a very good catcher defensively, but at the plate, he struggled mightily. So they have the potential, and knowing how we've been able to develop some of the younger talent this past year, I think that's a pretty solid lineup for next season. But once again, I really don't know anything about the signees coming in. I'm sure people who pay attention to Mississippi State baseball and know the signees and know the high school guys coming in would probably be able to answer that question a lot more than I can. Number three, why did we have to give up the third base dugout? Because we were the away team. We were the away team, and the away team is always in the first base dugout. Number four, why did LSU not have to give up the third base dugout? Oh. I don't know. Number five, what do you think about Curtis Thompson, Javelin, and Martha? I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Freitas? I guess it's Freitas. Fridays? I don't know. Marta Freitas, 100 or 1500 meter, winning the national titles. Good for them. Good for them, representing Mississippi State very well. Go Dawgs. Number six, can we start talking football now? Yes, we can. We're going to start talking football as early as next Tuesday. I think that we're sort of settling down on the baseball thing, and I'm sure baseball will sort of be wrapped up talking about by next week, and by that time, it'll be football season. And on Tuesday, we're going to be starting our SEC P&Ps. Ethan will be back on the Thursday show coming up, and he'll choose the team we will preview and predict on Tuesday, and starting from that point on, we're pretty much just going to be in football mode unless some baseball or basketball or any other sports news comes about. We'll be in football mode. So, going into the seventh inning, Mr. Vanderlip has an 18-15 lead. Excuse me, because I actually met Lewis at the Super Regional. Nice guy, and I gave him a run. So it's 18-16. Mr. V. Lee is going into the seventh inning. So that'll do it for this episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls. Unless, let me just make sure we don't have any extra questions. Yeah. Oh yeah, another one. How bad is Nick Mangione leaving gonna hurt? It depends on the replacement. I mean, Nick Mangione was our recruiting coordinator. It hurts on a recruiting standpoint and sort of a player relationship standpoint, but it depends on the replacement. I mean, we all thought that it was gonna be the end of the world going into the season when Butch Thompson left for Auburn, and we got Wes Johnson, and obviously that worked out pretty well. So it just depends on the replacement. If we get a not that worthy replacement, it'll definitely hurt. But if we get a good replacement, I don't think it'll matter that much. And yeah, that'll do it for this episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls. On Thursday, Ethan will be back, and we're going to be doing something interesting. We're going to be giving grades for every single sport Mississippi State participated in this past academic this past academic athletic season, the 2015-16 season, because it is over now. We're going to be giving grades, and we're going to be tweeting that out, some polls on the From the Cowboy Tolls Twitter account, for the fans to give their opinions, at MStateSports. is our Twitter for those who don't know. But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of the Podcast Tolls. And until then, thank you all for listening, and remember to be #very quality.